Am I talking to you or to Mike Tyson?
To Mike. And me. I'm the co-host.
Are you the co-host?
Yes, sir.
It's good to see you.
You look incredible.
For what? You look incredible for your age.
You guys are ready to rock? All right, I'll bring us in. They'll bring us our teas.
Go for it. Listen free to Hot Boxing, exclusively available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One. If you love the show, share it with a friend, and don't forget to leave us a rating or a review on Apple Podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Hot Boxing with Mike Tyson. I'm Evan Britton.
And I'm Mike Tyson.
And Mike, we've got, I mean, what can we say?
Legendary status, man.
Legend.
God status, man.
William Shatner, welcome to the show.
Captain Kirk.
In the course of a career, you do a lot of these things here, but I've never been so happy to be at one.
Thank you.
That's awesome.
Talking with you.
This is really beautiful.
We appreciate that very much.
Well, I've been an admirer of Mike's for a long time. Saw film on him when he was younger and followed his career with awe as he went through his fights and then the journey through his life. I've followed it pretty closely. So I'm excited to talk to you about it.
Awesome. That's going to be so awesome. Cool. And of course, you know, we watched you since puberty, before puberty and childhood infancy.
Yeah. Mike, I have to say, William, Mr. Shatner, sir.
Bill.
I remember when I was 6 or 7 years old, living in New York City. I was born in New York City, lived in Brooklyn. My father was a painter, an artist. And on this particular night, I went into the city with him to go to one of his art openings. And afterward, he took me to a video store. And he said, Eb, you can pick out any video you want. I said, okay. And at that time, it was still VHS. And I found one of the original Star Trek series, a videotape. It had like 3 episodes on it.
Were there any Klingons on there?
No, but this one episode, it became like sort of an allegory for my life. This man, Captain Kirk, had crash landed on this planet and he had to fight off these Yeti-like Bigfoot alien creatures. And I was trying to find what episode it was last night, but I couldn't find it. But I have to say, I was like, Captain Kirk is one of the baddest ass dudes I've ever seen in my life.
Well, a beautiful childhood memory of yours with your dad.
Absolutely.
A lot of people do that. Yeah, I saw it with my father, and I said, but my interest here this afternoon is with you guys and with Mike Tyson. This, did you watch any of the football games this past weekend? And
yes.
I won't say which weekend and
no,
what
but
teams.
I've been hearing a lot about this guy, Lamar Jackson.
Lamar Jackson.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
That's exactly where I was going.
A lot about him.
That's exactly where I was going.
He's unstoppable.
Another guy, Lamar Jackson.
Another guy they try to compare with him, too.
Every so often in an era, in a decade, in an age, an athlete emerges, and you're like, that is like one of the great. That's what human beings are supposed to be like.
Yes.
Physically.
Yes.
And when you came out, it was the same thing. Here was a boxer whose talent was limitless. Lamar Jackson is a quarterback whose talent, you just didn't know the limits. He's just starting. Your talents as a boxer was unknown. And in everything, as an actor, as an athlete who rides, whose sport now is competing on horses in various disciplines, but in every walk of life, you need the confirmation. You need whatever your body's required to do. You need the talent to whatever it is you're doing. But most importantly, you need the hunger. You need the rage. You need the intensity. You need the wanting. And the wanting can't be taught, can't be bought. It's there or it's not there.
Yeah.
So he came out as a boxer, and that's where I wanted to go with you. My bewilderment in fighting. Can I go there with you?
Please.
I as a kid in school, for a number of reasons, I was in a fight 2-3 times a day in Montreal, Canada. Mm-hmm. I was defending myself, and I had to take on 1, 2, 3 people at a time. And somebody gave me a yearbook from my high school that I hadn't seen, and my nickname was Tuffy because I was always in a fight. But the fights we were in, especially in the winter in Canada, with your heavy overcoats and everything, you swing and you hit, you know, not much happens. You're wrestling around on the ground. I've never been in an adult fight where a guy has got this as a weapon and wants to knock me down, and presumably the rage is to kill. I was once in a actor's makeup room. I was in my makeup room, and I'd had a tussle with the guy, with a fellow actor backstage. He had said something, and we swung, and we missed, and it was all okay. And he comes in my room and kicks the door shut, and we're locked in a room together. Okay? And holy, I am so shit, angry that I'm looking at his jugular, and I'm thinking, I'll leap on him and bite his jugular. That's how animal I had been. And the door opened up, and they stopped us from fighting. That's as close as an adult as I come to fighting.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. I have never had a guy pound my face, pound my body as an adult who could kill me. Hmm. That's the feeling I want to know about. Hmm. And you saying, really, like, amazing, like, you've never been in a fight, my God. Who hasn't been in a fight? A lot of people haven't been in a fight.
Well, that's interesting, because I explained it to my wife. I told my wife, I said, this during our period when we were just really getting to know each other as a married couple. And I said, you have to understand, what I did for a living, people avoid their whole entire life.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. That's the dichotomy. That's that, and the difference in our upbringing. I know you came from the streets. I know you were a tough guy on the streets, age 16. Customato finds you. You find Customato. You start boxing. And this talent that you had, but also the rage.
And perceived to be rage. It's really not rage. The perception of rage.
Tell me about that.
Fighting is all about, the art of fighting is not fighting. It's the perception of fighting.
Wow. Give me an example.
The perception of the person who, what is his name? Achilles, the greatest warrior of all. Your perception of fighting him.
Right. Well, so the perception of fighting him would be to run away, unless you knew that his heel, that his tendon in his heel was the only vulnerable part of his body.
Exactly. But in order to do that, you have to risk the chance
of getting killed. You have to run around in circles.
Whatever it is, you have to take that risk. And that's what fighting is about, taking risk.
Okay, so let's not talk about the guys in the ring who now, you know, you're covering up and you're jabbing and you're not allowed to kick. And you can't kick him in the balls, and you can't use your fingers to poke his eyes out. Things that on the street, if you had to save your life, you might be doing anything you can think of in minimal amounts of stuff that you've read about that are hurtful or deadly, you would be doing to save your life. But now you're a kid, and you're able to kick and bite and scream. That is as primitive as the Vikings with their broadswords. Mm. The Vikings with their broad, before guns, when you had to face the enemy with a knife or a sword or your hands, does anybody ever forget that? Nobody talks in history of battle fatigue.
That's interesting that you bring that up. Mm-hmm. You know how gladiators got discovered during war? And some of the captives, prisoners of war, some of the other warriors, say I'm a Greek and I caught some Persian. Yeah. So we're bored, so we're not fighting 24 hours. The war doesn't even last long. 20 minutes the war is over, they break up and they plan to fight another war. Mm-hmm. So this scrimmage stuff. But when they catch some Persians or something, so the Greeks go like, they get bored. They say, hey, let's make them fight each other. And then they start fighting each other, and then they fight to the death, and then some of the guys, the Greeks give some of the Persians some of the winning of the money they made, and so they said, wow, I got money, They start, first time they're in prison, now I'm out there starving. Now we're eating and drinking from fighting. I like fighting.
For entertainment.
Yeah, I'm eating. They gave me money. And so now this is how they created wars, and that's how gladiators got created.
I understand. Now, that's an interesting phrase. I like fighting. Do we know people who like fighting?
Absolutely. But they don't like hurting people. Isn't that something?
Yeah. So how do you explain that? Because you ought to hurt somebody to win the fight, right?
Absolutely. But the fact is...
And you're talking about yourself?
No, I'm talking about fighters in general.
But you in particular?
No, I like the fact of hurting somebody in a match.
In the ring.
Fighting. Yeah.
That was scary for them.
Yeah.
Opponent, they knew that you liked hurting them.
Yeah, and it's not that I like hurting them. I like to portray the perception that I like hurting people.
So wait a minute. You're talking about several levels of things going on. You removed yourself from absolutely liking to hurt somebody, but you wanted to give the perception of liking to hurt somebody.
Exactly.
But in reality, you didn't like to hurt somebody.
But
why did you like to give that perception?
Because with that perception, he becomes intimidated.
Intimidated.
Yes.
You're the intimidator.
Yes.
By saying, I'm going to eat your children.
No, by thinking I'm going to eat your children.
That's what I mean.
Not by saying it.
No, you wouldn't eat their children because they don't taste particularly. You need a lot of hot sauce. But the perception.
It's all perception, yes.
And so when you said, I'm going to tell him I'm going to eat his kids, it was all, I'm a beast and I'm coming in the ring and
absolutely.
I'm going to, and I'll start eating you first before I eat your kids.
And absolutely. And some of my prior annex over the years, he saw possibly I will eat his kids.
But wait a minute. I love this. So the first question is, why do you want to give that? Is it to intimidate them? But I'm going to eat your kids is like, that goes beyond.
Absolutely.
And you meant it to go beyond. Absolutely. You were trying to think of what's the worst thing I can think of to intimidate him?
Probably, yeah.
But you wouldn't do that out of the ring?
No.
Did you never intimidate anybody out of the ring?
Before boxing?
Anything other to do than with boxing? Any other endeavor? Did you ever try to intimidate somebody?
I never knew what intimidated was. I knew what intimidated was, but I didn't know what it was because I was always intimidated as a kid.
That's what I saw in the film, and that's what I wanted to talk to you about, the fear, because you were as afraid as I am about being in a fight because I don't want to get banged up and I don't want to go to a hospital. I don't want to die. You're living on the streets, and you're fighting for your life every day.
Yeah.
So you had to. Did you use intimidation then?
Not much when I was a kid, but I would just fight somebody. I wasn't.
You were winning.
I wasn't aggressive.
Fights.
Yeah, I was winning, but I wasn't.
Because you were
aggressive
a strong
guy.
Kid.
I just listen. This is really weird. It just came to me naturally.
It was
fighting.
Great.
Even when I didn't want to do it, it came to me naturally. Even when I was scared to fight the guy, I might hit him and I break his nose by accident. Things stop. Stupid stuff like that.
No, it's not stupid at all. It's incredible.
Yeah.
Because animals, dogs, horses have natural
instincts
to do whatever it is they're supposed to do. You can only teach a horse or a dog so much, but if they've been bred to herd sheep. Like police shepherds, they're particularly prone to listening to orders, and they've been bred to do certain. Part of our behavior is our genetic structure. We're probably half of what we are has been passed on to us. Whether it's a tendency to like shellfish or to have a good right cross or whatever it is, half of what we've got has been handed to us from our parents. Mm-hmm. The other half is, I don't think you get much argument that half is nurture and half is nature.
Exactly. Listen, I want to go to this other level of intimidation. I want you to get to the essence of it.
So intimidation came to you.
I put that out there. I'm educated. I put intimidation out there because I'm scared.
So I want to talk to you about being scared. What does being scared mean? Tell me what. Give me an example of a guy.
Being afraid is an illusion of your worst nightmare.
Yes, it's, that will never it's coming true.
If you live to be 100 years old,
what are you talking about? Here comes a big guy. What are you, 5'11"?
5'10 and a half.
My height.
Yes.
Okay? 5'10 and a half. And we fought for every half inch.
Yes.
So if I said 5'11", you had to be totally honest. You could have said, yeah, I'm 5'11". But 5'10 and a half because you're exact.
Exactly.
Right. Okay.
A
guy 6'3" yeah. is coming at you.
Yeah.
That's fearful.
It is. But it's something that I know, even though I'm only afraid because I'm human, but I'm not intimidated.
Even as a kid on the streets?
No, I'm not intimidated. I'm afraid to death, but not intimidated.
All right. Define for me what you mean by being you're afraid, but you're not intimidated. Because I would think the two...
Being afraid is a feeling. This is how I feel because of this.
Yeah.
The feeling. Being intimidated, but that's just a feeling, but it doesn't stop me from acting.
Ah, and being intimidated makes you...
Being intimidated prevents me from acting.
Yes.
It stops me in my track.
Right.
Like a deer in the headlights.
Right.
I can't perform at the highest level that I normally perform because I'm intimidated.
Got it. Mm. So you were afraid but not intimidated.
Never intimidated. I'm not afraid. Listen, let's do it from a fighting term, not even a street term. Let's go pop. Fighting is not as violent. I don't care who you are, how big you are, what reputation you got. If you hit me, I'm going to hit you back. And I'm going to hit you back with the intentions of hurting you. Most big guys don't expect that to come back from people. They expect a little back, but they don't expect people to fight them to the end.
Uh-huh.
That's what I realize.
On the street.
Huh?
On the street.
In the ring, too. You know, well, in the street, it could be instant. In the street, they could put a gun or a knife. I'm talking about in the ring when it's just you and another man.
Right.
And he throws his, and you throw your back, and he throws his, and you don't stop. And you fight.
Do you feel what night. He? Do you feel what he when he hits you? Do you feel it?
Sometimes.
Does it hurt?
Sometimes.
Mike, I love you, Mike. I love the answers. I love your. Your passion, your feeling, your allowing yourself to open up the way you are.
No, how can you be a fighter if you're not afraid? Fighters have to understand the concept of dealing with fear.
Did Cuss ever talk to you about that?
Absolutely. I learned everything I learned from Cuss.
So he talked about fear and
absolutely.
How to... Oh, my goodness. I never thought that would be a conversation.
People wonder if they say they're not afraid, they're either insane or they're lying.
Right. And that goes for anybody in the ring.
Fear is our friend. Fear is like fire. You know what I mean? If you're afraid of it and you let it get out of control, it can destroy you and everything around you. But if you control it, it can cook food for you. It can heat you, keep you warm. Mm. It can be your friend. It can fight for you.
Hello.
Hey, Mike.
What's up, Evan?
Man, I'm just feeling really overwhelmed right now, dude. I've hit a wall. I don't know. I'm a little angry.
Listen, Evan, I wish I could help you, but I'm not a trained therapist.
I know, but you always give such great advice.
I appreciate that, but I think you should check out Talkspace.
Talkspace?
Talkspace is the online therapy that makes it easy to talk about your life, deal with your stress, and achieve your goals.
And they have real therapists?
Over 5,000 licensed and trained therapists that can help you with your depression, your addiction, your stress, your relationship, and more.
And I do this all from the privacy of my phone or computer?
Absolutely.
That's awesome, because stigma about mental health keeps many people, especially men, from speaking up. But with Talkspace, you don't have to worry about it.
Whether you're training for a marathon or trying to get a new job, achieving goals, start with a strong mind. And Talkspace online therapy is there to help you.
But I can still call and talk to you, right, Mike? Mike? Huh. Must have gotten disconnected. Anyway, the bottom line is that we could all benefit from therapy. Talkspace wants to give more of us a chance to achieve our goals and feel our best at a price we can afford. As a listener of Hotboxing, you can get $100 off your first month on Talkspace to match with your perfect therapist for a fraction of the price of traditional therapy. Go to Talkspace.com or download the app. Make sure to use the code Tyson to get $100 off your first month and show your support for the show. That's Tyson and Talkspace.com.
As we head into the back half of the NFL season, it's always a bittersweet moment. It's hard to believe half the season's over.
But the good news is there is even better football on the horizon. The NFL playoff push, college football playoff arguments, and soon enough, bowl season.
So if you're looking to get excited, make BetDSI.com your betting partner.
That's right, Mike. And it couldn't be any easier because new members at BetDSI get 100% bonus match using promo code Tyson101.
Whoa, that's pretty awesome, man. You can use your sports knowledge to make some extra cash.
And who couldn't use a little extra cash? Make a little bread while watching TV. They have the fastest payouts in the industry. Simply play, win, and get paid.
Wow. New members get 100% bonus match using promo code Tyson101. That's double your money to start winning today.
Once again, go to BetDSI.com and use promo code Tyson101 and get this limited time 100% bonus offer to get yourself paid.
It's only a game until you bet it. BetDSI.
I saw you. What was the name of it? Was he a light heavyweight? That wonderful, graceful man who put his arm around your shoulders to talk to you about fear? He was training with you. What was his name?
Teddy Atlas.
And he had his arm around you. And you were 18. And you were weeping going into the ring. And I don't know what you were weeping about.
I always cry before I fight.
You did? Always cry before
I
fight? What were you crying about?
I don't know. I'm just that's just who I am.
Yeah, but go further. What's the emotion?
I'm getting ready to change into somebody I don't like.
You're getting ready to change you. Change into the fighter.
Yeah.
And you don't like that fighter.
Not really. No, not really.
Wow. Mike Tyson. That's illuminating. You are the greatest fighter that ever lived, and you didn't like that guy.
He brought more than just fighting with him.
What do you mean?
He brought like jealousy, enviness, guilt. He brought a lot of stuff.
All the bad qualities that you learned were bad, you assigned to that Mike Tyson.
Yeah.
That isn't the Mike Tyson I'm talking to.
No, not at all. That's interesting you said. No one ever put that together. But yeah, that's who I was. Everything that was bad was that guy. Everything I remember from my past, my mother, my family. With that guy.
And you were able to cut him off at some point in time?
He's tough to cut off. He's my ego. He doesn't want to go.
Right. So he's still with you?
Yeah, he's better. He's,
to a lesser degree or the same
he's
degree?
He's more under control now by far.
But one that's in control or at times gets out of control?
I hope not. He always sneaks up every now and then.
Let me tell you a moment that I had with George Foreman. I was in the ring with George Foreman.
Really?
Yeah, in a show that I did with him. I traveled the world with George Foreman 2 years. I had the best time with him.
He's awesome.
He's awesome. So we're in Thailand, and they're in the boxing ring, and they bring up George, and George goes in, and they all applaud because they're all the Thai fighters all know him, and of course I'd known a little bit about George at that point. Know him a little bit better now. But they said, and I used to box as a kid, just fooling around, basically. But as the characters I played, I pretended I knew what to do and how to shoot.
And you had a good physique. I used to watch you.
I had a good physique, and I had the technique.
Yeah.
You know, I punched from the hip. So I get in the ring with George. And I had talked a little bit about George, who said basically the same thing, that he liked to, when he was younger, he liked to hit people. He went into the ring to kill somebody. He wasn't two people. He was in touch with that other person more before he had this transformation. So he said, yeah, I used to be a killer, but I don't do that anymore. Now I'm dancing around him, and I'm popping with a popping. And then I see the fire. You know how sometimes you see a horror film and they put a light in the eye? I see the eye light up. And the killer is there for an instant. I looked into the killer, and then we did a pretend. He swings at me, and I took it like a movie punch.
I've seen pictures of him in his prime. He's picking up a full-grown cow.
He was a bull. He was a beast.
A full-grown cow. He's pressing a full-grown cow.
And then he had a transformation unlike anything you've ever heard of, or maybe other people have had. But it was an extraordinary moment. So that's the two of Mike Tyson's.
Yeah, you have to look at this. This is really interesting. You're a fighter. But this is, you know, hurting people's interesting, but you go like this. The more you hurt someone, the more the people's going to love you.
The more you hurt somebody, the more people are going to love
you. The more spectacular you hurt them, the more spectacular you knock them out, the more they're going to love you.
All right. And now I'm going to ask you, I don't know how this program is, but I'm going to ask you a question I wanted.
It's all good.
In your honesty and in your absolute honesty, your reality. So I was in the arena the night you and Holyfield. I was there as a guest of one of the sponsors, I guess. And I saw you fight, and I saw you bite him on the ear. And then we all saw the footage and all that kind of thing. So, linking up what you've just said about Mike Tyson and the good and the bad, who bit and why did you bite him on the ear?
I was really out of control because he kept butting my head, and he took me totally out of my game plan, which was a really awesome plan on his behalf.
Tell me what the plan was.
I mean, he took me off my game.
Well, what was the game? What did you go in wanting to do?
Constantly attack him and punch me and constantly attack him. Mm. And every time I came in, he butted my head. Mm. And I didn't care even though he butted my head because I was butting his head back. But when he was butting me, he was cutting me. You know what I mean? And I got mad because I was almost being a brat because I got mad.
You were almost being a what?
A brat, because I got mad because
he's more than a brat, my friend.
He was beating me at being a better dirty fighter than me, and I got pissed off.
Because he was getting away with headbutting you.
I was headbutting him, too. Yeah. He was doing a better job than I was.
So you lost control.
Yeah.
And the guy that I looked into in that dressing room, thinking, I'll bite him on the jugular. I mean, it's total animal. That's what you felt that moment on the ear?
No, that's who we are.
Well, we are.
That's who we are. And know what happens, too? On this process of evolution, some people get domesticated faster than others.
Or some people have a background that doesn't lead to that domestication.
Exactly.
Right away.
But, you know, we all don't get domesticated at the same time.
Right.
You know? Some people have to learn faster than others, some learn slower than others.
But that was a street fight maneuver, was it not?
No, it was just undisciplined.
Yeah. No. Michael, biting somebody, taking a hunk of flesh out of somebody's ear.
In the street, if you're in a controlled atmosphere, like a controlled sport, that's just really undisciplined.
That's one word to apply to it, undisciplined. The other is such rage that you knew that you would get called for it. I mean, you might not have been thinking then that if I do this, I'll get called for it. But the impulse to do it comes out of
absolutely. Yeah. But it doesn't really come out of rage. Listen, in my situation, it came out of me being a fucking dick, being Mike, and I can get away, do whatever I want. It wasn't like, fuck you, I'm gonna kill you, motherfucker. Like, you motherfucker.
It wasn't that.
Yeah, it was like, you motherfucker. And I bet him. It wasn't like, oh, I'm going to kill you, motherfucker.
So you mean it was more calculated?
Yeah.
Wow. What do you think about that when you think about Mike Tyson who did that? What's your thought about that?
It came from me being a prima donna. I could do what the fuck I want.
Oh, okay. You had been the king of the world.
Yeah.
And that went to your head, you think?
No, my lifestyle went to my head.
What?
Being king of the world, my lifestyle went to my head.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
As being, you had everything.
Yeah, I can do it.
You had monumental money. You had monumental women.
It wasn't that. Because having all that, I was still empty. That didn't fulfill my hole.
It didn't.
No, that stuff don't fulfill.
You were still empty.
Yeah. You know, when you have a hole like that, you have to go to something bigger than yourself.
What have you found that?
I don't know. It's me. You know, all that stuff that I was doing, that wasn't me.
This is you?
Yeah, I had to discover.
Is this you?
Yeah, I truly believe this is me.
Talking, relating with, doing business.
Absolutely. I've never done this before.
Are you good at it?
It seems to be. I'm pretty good at it. I got you here.
Have you got the intuition about people, instincts about people?
I don't know. I'm comfortable with the people I'm with. Anybody outside of that, that might be pretty skeptical, but my pretty much.
Are you shy, Mike?
In certain cases, maybe.
Basically, then, are you comfortable being in a room with strangers, or would you rather not be there and be with people you know?
If I can learn from them, I'd like to be around.
Ah.
I look at people as teachers. I used to look at people as competitors. Or women as just somebody I could sleep with or have a lustful encounter with. But I look at people now as my teachers.
That's fantastic.
Bill, how about that desire and that passion that we kicked this thing off with, talking about Lamar Jackson maybe being the NFL's version of a Mike Tyson, this ultimate expression of humanity through athletic ability. I mean, you're a cultural icon, man. Like, and you created this persona of yourself. Did you bring that? Did you have that passion and that desire infused in your acting career?
You had to. There's no doubt.
You know, I don't recall. I mean, I'm probably more passionate about performing now because I'm so busy and I'm on and I'm running and I'm thinking this last 2 weeks, for example, when I started this last 2 weeks and I had to go to Saudi Arabia and then I had to go to Ticonderoga and then I had to go to New York and then I went to Ottawa and I went and I'm flying and I'm dying and I'm driving and I'm talking and I'm performing and I'm thinking, I don't know whether I can do that. Not only because I'm the age I am, and getting that heavy suitcase up into the thing up there with my shoulders is getting harder to do. In fact, I know I'm getting older. You know how I'm getting older? You know how I know I'm getting older? Can I help you, sir? I'm getting a lot of that. What do you mean, can I help you, sir? What do I look like I need? Would you mind helping me with this bag? Excuse me, would you mind helping me getting the bag down? I know I'm old.
That's interesting. I talked to George Foreman not too long. The last time I was at a boxing event. You know, it wasn't a boxing, but just like Hall of Fame, something, just an award show. And his daughter had just died. And I was saying, I'm sorry about your loss. And he was saying, hey, listen, I'm happy to be alive to see a lot of things.
Is that what he said?
He was just grateful.
I sent him a note myself when his daughter died.
If I wasn't around, I wouldn't be able to see this. And I was thinking that too. And then so you're right here, and I'm saying, I'm holy, 87. Somebody told me you're 87.
Am I?
83.
Yeah.
Something like
I'm in that area.
Listen, so what? Tell me, do you think about dying? Do you think about dying?
All the time.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Do you think it's going to be pretty exciting?
No.
I think it is.
I don't want to leave.
Really?
Well, I'm having too good a time.
Oh, I think, listen, if this is great, death has to be fucking glorious.
No, it can't be.
Oh,
but it's the cessation of all of everything, Mike.
I think that's when we reach our highest plateau.
You mean in the moment of dying?
I mean when we no longer exist. That's our greatest.
Well, let us lead into that.
Okay.
Let me tell you this story. I watched two deep sea divers on film, and they're working on on the platform of an oil rig. So they're like 800 feet down. They're in hard suits. They've got the umbilical cord, and there's a boat 800 feet up there, hovering over them, being guided
giving them air. They're getting air from the boat?
Getting air from the boat and communication and everything. It's their umbilical cord. And the boat is hovering over them by means of a computer. So the computer is running directly over them, and it turns left, turns right automatically. Computer goes out. The boat starts to drift. The boat starts to pull the divers along with it as it's drifting out. One guy is clear of the platform. The other guy gets caught in the platform, and the boat pulls. Boom. The umbilical cord on this guy stops. He's got a can of oxygen, gives him 5 minutes of life. He clambers on top of the half-built platform, lies on top, sucks on the oxygen, and meanwhile, the other guy is saying, we've only got 5 minutes to get him back. Takes 34 minutes to get him back. The diver gets his body, brings it to the vehicle that's brought them down, gets him into it, and they lock the doors, and he's supposed to be dead. Mm. He's alive. Mm. And when he comes to, all he can say is, it's all right. The guy's name is Tom. It's all right, Tom. That's what he says. It's all right. And Tom thinks he means he's okay. When he came to consciousness fully, the guy said, no, I died, and it's all right, was what he said. And I thought, I was moved to tears, because to me it's going to be painful. To me you're going to be alone. To me it's the end of all the good things. All the wonderful, you're sitting here, you finally have done it, Mike Tyson. You've got the respect of the world, you've got the respect of everybody around, you've got this wonderful business going, you've got it. You've got everything you want peacefully. Why would you want to leave? You don't want to leave, do you? Do you?
Wow.
Do you want to leave?
Why don't you make it like it's frightening to leave and go somewhere?
I wrote a script in which the soldier, who was a brave man, has a heart attack, has a near-death experience, and in his near-death experience, it isn't white clouds and angels. It's demons. We've got you. Come.
Well, listen.
And then they pull him back. The doctors pull him back. And now, instead of being a brave man, he doesn't want to die. I'm a coward. He leaves his wife and children in jeopardy because he doesn't want to die. He's afraid of dying. That's the story I wrote.
That's interesting, but I think this is all an illusion.
You're not afraid of dying?
No, I was. I was at one time.
And now?
No.
Because you found what?
Because I found that how could we have glorious moments in life and not have it in death? Why would God allow us to be born to make us feel miserable, to make us have fear of dying?
You know, we have more in tune with an earthworm than anything else. Our DNA is like 55% of an earthworm, and trees and us have the same. We're all linked.
I know, we're all one.
We're all one. So does the earthworm going to live forever and have an afterlife? My dog, my beloved dog?
Hey, listen, maybe that earthworm, the fact that you encountered him, you saw him, maybe he's your mother, maybe he's somebody that's dead and trying to see you.
Well, that's another possible reincarnation.
We see him, we step him, get away from me, motherfucker.
That's your relationship with your mother.
Yeah.
Gotcha, Ma. Finally.
No, that's Ma. It's me, son. I love you. I'm so happy you're successful. Look at you. It's me.
Yeah, never mind.
Get the fuck away from me.
Shut the fuck up.
You bug. We may come back as a rock. Imagine coming back as a rock.
Well, granted, it's supposed to have some lifelike qualities. My point is, if there's an afterlife for us, isn't there an afterlife for the earthworm?
Listen, I say that too. I say, listen, I'm at my son's baseball game and I'm watching some ants. And it's around the time of the year where they're about to die. It's getting cold. So I'm looking at these ants and I tell my wife, I said, look at these ants. I said, what they accomplish in, 2 months, the summer, the spring, we couldn't accomplish in a lifetime.
That's exactly right.
Right? And then I said, just like we're watching them, there's somebody watching us. And if you don't believe that, then that's why they made the ego, to believe that there's nothing bigger than us.
Well, there may very well be a lot of things bigger than us, but it seems to be that when you go, you're gone in your present form, and you may have another life in another universe, but the things you love here don't seem to... come back. I mean,
we're interesting. You said love, because love is love supersedes our existence. If we go into that level now,
well, I'm not. I don't know about that.
Yeah, love supersedes.
Well, love in making the earth, you mean making the world.
Forget that. My love for somebody will last forever, and they would know about my love. My love would be known forever.
Well, that's a romantic ideal, but the people who loved you who are now dead.
And yeah. I know they love me.
Well,
and my children,
because you've had the sensation when you die that their love for you will have died as well, because it's your memory of that.
No, I've died before. Since I've came in and gotten, since I've been in this organization and I've engaged my relationship with Rob Hickman, my partner, I've died probably 9 times already.
Yeah. Give me one instance of dying once.
Dying is using a very ancient medicine.
You used?
Yeah, called the toad.
Oh, the poison from the toad?
Yeah, the toad.
You took that?
Did I? Yeah.
And what happened?
And I died.
And what was, how do you know, what did you see or what did you feel in your death?
I didn't see anything. I felt everything.
What did you feel?
I felt that I was afraid.
Afraid?
I felt that everything I did my whole life was because of fear based. And I realized I don't want no one to see. I don't want to be that afraid little boy where everybody could beat me up and do whatever they want to me.
You had a deep insight into yourself.
Yeah.
But what? Well, that doesn't sound like dying. That sounds like living.
No. To get to that moment, you had to die. My ego died.
I see.
And it's only a 20-minute
I know,
but
you know,
you get around 10,000 years of experience.
Yes, that's fantastic. I'm too cowardly to experience that because I don't want to go on a bad trip.
Well, yeah, you do have some bad trips sometimes.
Yeah. That's where I don't want to lose control of at least the fear I have. I'm in control of it up to a certain point, except in the middle of the night when you wake up and think I'm going to die and what's going to happen.
Since I've been taking it to, I don't even think about dying. I think of dying and being glorious.
How old are you?
I'm 53.
How are you doing physically?
The best shape I've been in years. Over
fantastic. You don't hurt?
I hurt, but
you got to take great. Some of your stuff.
Yeah, I do that.
Do you really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel better than I felt probably in 30 years.
Your back doesn't hurt?
My back hurt, but it's hurt because of a lot of hard work. But when I use my Carpal Gel, it's good.
It's good?
It's just sometimes I don't know when to stop working out. I do it too much. It gets like a drug, and next thing I know, I hurt myself.
Oh, that's fantastic. So you've gone into your psyche 9 times.
Yes.
And each time you died, had a resurrection and a realization.
Exactly.
And came back.
You know.
Richer for it.
Yeah, I had one experience. I thought I was the baddest man on the planet. I was going through that. Fuck that. I'm almost like I'm God. How can anybody stop me? And then I met the God of War. And then I just dissolved in his presence. I couldn't even match being in his presence. So everything I
Do you think of yourself as a warrior then? As an ancient warrior? As a warrior reincarnated again and again? Were you a warrior?
My ego tells me that.
Well, your ego's part of it.
My ego tells me that, you know. But then my ego tells me this. If you're going to take the warrior's ideology, you need a body. You need to kill somebody. So,
but you could take the warrior ideology and not kill somebody. You could just be noble and truthful.
But that's not the warrior's ideology, to be noble and all that stuff. That's not really the warrior's ideology. The warrior's ideology is to get
stay alive.
To stay alive, become the best he could possibly be. By only doing that, he has to challenge the best.
To kill as many people as possible.
Yes.
Well, I guess the interpretation of the word warrior is...
There's nothing noble about a warrior.
I was taking it, I guess, from the ideals of King Arthur and the whole romantic idea.
No, those guys were robbers and criminals and
yes.
stuff.
Yes. In reality, which that's what they were. the age of...
Chivalry.
Chivalry, exactly. That isn't necessarily what a warrior is.
No.
Yeah. Wow, Mike, this has been incredible.
Definitely.
You calling a halt to proceedings at all?
No, this place goes on for hours.
We go for a little while, but yeah,
Tony Robbins, we had all those guys, man, but nobody like you, Captain Kirk.
Captain Kirk, man.
It must be hard to even, you had TJ Hooker.
Well, you're hung up on
how about the Twilight Zone?
What?
How about the Twilight Zone, man? One of the all-time episodes.
Well, he's right. I'm hung up.
Well, that's the Twilight Zone. Prior to Captain Kirk, I was a popular actor in Canada and then a popular actor on live television in the States and then on Broadway. So I had a good career going prior to Captain Kirk. And subsequent to Captain Kirk, a lot of things have happened. And so in my mind, I've gone way beyond that. But in certain other people's minds, because they had an experience with the character, they were either watching the show at a very young age, or a lot of people have watched the show with parents who are now dead, and it reminds them of their childhood experience.
Who's the oldest celebrity you ever met?
Like, say again.
Who's the oldest famous person, like a vaudevillian that you met, like George Burns or somebody? Who's the oldest?
I did meet George Burns. I probably Leonard Nimoy. He did a movie where he went back in time, and I told him, Leonard, you're old when you go back in time and you still look old. That's really old. He was about my age. I went from being, as you did, the youngest guy in the room, you're only what? To being the oldest guy in the room. I don't know when that happened.
Yeah, but it puts you in perspective. You know, as I see myself in pictures getting older, because I don't like to look in the mirror and stuff, and then sometimes I look at myself and I say, wow, I saw a girl that I dated 17 years ago. I didn't see her in 17 years, she was told. And she still had a picture of me from 17 years and saw the picture. I said, wow. Hmm. You're stuck in time.
Wow.
You can't believe you even look at that was me?
Wow. Yeah.
It's frightening.
You're looking elegant with your gray beard.
It looks
if you
great.
Shave that off, you'd lose a lot of years.
Well, I would never shave it off, but
why? Why wouldn't you shave? I don't like beards.
You don't?
What do women? I asked a guy with a beard. His wife was there, and I said to her, do you like the beard? Because, you know, you ever kiss a guy, you rub your cheek against a guy in a bristly beard?
Yeah.
At Christmas. You know, I don't want that next to me. So I'm always shaving when I'm going to see somebody. I always shave.
Yeah.
But so I said to his wife, you like the beard? And she went,
no.
She hated it.
And that's why I do it. I do it for, I don't want no woman to think I'm attractive.
You're still handsome, you're kidding, Mike.
Because you're an attractive man.
No, but that's the purpose. I don't want a woman to look at me that way.
You don't want a woman to look at you that way?
Yeah.
Why not?
I'm not interested in that.
Oh, you don't want to get into that?
Yeah, I'm not interested.
You don't want to be tempted?
Yeah, I don't want to
temptation.
Yeah, I don't want to
It's temptation.
Not having the beard.
What?
Not having the beard.
It would be temptation.
I might think that I'm
calling.
Right.
Calling upon temptation.
Calling upon temptation. So you're fighting that temptation.
I'm not fighting it. I'm controlling it.
You're controlling that temptation of other women.
Yeah, I used to know. I used to want anybody to have no idea of any kind.
Well, you had a terrible experience with another. You had the worst experience. You had the male human being's nightmare.
No, I didn't. I had the best experience in the world.
All right, tell me about that.
That was just a great experience.
You know? Come on.
That's dealing with my feelings. That's all of our feelings, you know what I mean? All of us as men, we're afraid of not being looked at as men. That's your feeling, too, being stripped of your dignity by another man. Or even by a woman. That's our biggest fear. That's our quote-unquote tough guy biggest fear, to have another man humiliated. That's our woman. It's the fact of us being humiliated, less than being who we perceive ourselves to being in front of.
Were you humiliated by her?
No. I don't think I was.
No.
But I was humiliated.
You were.
I was in love.
You were
in love? Yeah. That's the only way I was humiliated, because I was in love.
But does that not then make you redefine the word love?
I never defined it.
Well, you were yearning for it.
It was just a feeling.
Right, but what was the feeling? You had a hole, and you wanted it filled with that kind of love, which is included maternal love, right?
I don't believe it was that. It was my ego, it was my greed, selfishness.
No, man.
I perceive that
as
love.
No, no, no.
No.
Every human being's... You know that experiment they had with... chimpanzees. They took chimpanzees.
I saw that experience.
And they went to the base.
The science of love.
They wanted to be held more than they wanted to eat.
They ate too, but they...
Well, but they went to be cuddled first.
Yeah, but listen, because this is something that you have to understand. Since you're being given the dissertation, once you're in love, and once you go through the dark side of love, which is betrayal, you never love the same again.
Because you're always on guard, and your virginity has been ruined.
Big time.
Yeah. It changes your life, absolutely.
Absolutely. I have to be very careful with my engagements with women.
Absolutely. Our emotions are buried in us that need to be fed, and if they're not fed, they result in other emotions that you don't recognize. So your lack of early love started you on a point of your career, point of your life that gave you a certain angle. Your intelligence monitoring those impulses gave you another intelligence, and we all have that to one degree or another. The reptilian brain and the frontal ego is at war all the time.
There's no doubt. And it also uses love as a game, as a tool for a game.
You ever meditate, Bill?
Meditate?
Yep.
I try.
Yep.
I try to meditate on my breath.
Oh, I had a great... I have a great...
You got an app, Mike?
I'm on some meditation music, 4-3-2.
I love it. Oh, yeah.
You know what's the best meditation?
Frequency is off the hook.
A little tincture of this stuff.
CBD?
The CBD.
Yeah.
That's my new sleep potion.
That's great. It's great stuff.
Yeah.
I meditate every day. Meditation...
What do you do... What is your meditation method? What is the methodology?
I sit in a chair that allows my hips to be higher than my knees so that I can
have an
erect spine. So I feel as though a string is pulling the top of my head straight.
So you're not caved in.
Exactly. I'm not like slouched at all. My feet are flat on the ground. And I just begin to focus on my breath, in the nose, out the nose. And as our minds are wired to just constantly be figuring out shit, analyzing data, keeping us alive, you know, that reptilian brain, etc., is all happening constantly, especially in this digital age where we have this, you know, these phones and fucking technology, and that we're just constantly bombarded by stimuli. So your mind is going to wander. Now, the practice of meditation for me becomes as thoughts come up, as memories come up, I acknowledge them and I bring my focus back to my breath. And it becomes that constant practice of coming back to the breath.
And then I'm meditating.
Yeah.
The impulse is, of course, to fall asleep.
Yeah.
You got to avoid that.
Well, that's not bad either.
Well,
you know?
Do you have difficulty going to sleep?
No, but once I wake up, I stay up all night. Like, I may go to bed 7 o'clock. I wake up at 1.
Yeah.
I'm not going back to sleep. So I may smoke some weed. I go downstairs, drink some tea, watch some television till like 2, maybe 3 o'clock. And then I get on the bike.
At 3 o'clock in the morning?
Yeah, I do the bike for an hour.
Now, look, just what you just did there was like intense.
Yeah,
like,
I do it very intense.
Intense.
So let's say 30 minutes. In 30 minutes, I may do 300 calories. I burn 300 calories in 30 minutes. Close
awesome.
To 290, to something like that.
Get a good sweat on?
Somebody is dishing me reward. Then I get off of that, and then I might get on the treadmill for an hour. Get 400 calories.
Nice.
Then I may go to then do some.
Do a little weights.
Weights, yeah.
Bill, do you exercise?
I'm in a pool.
Nice.
I've got a pool, and I keep it warm, so it's pleasant to go in.
Nice.
And so I go in there, and a great bone surgeon, I don't know what you call him.
Orthopedic surgeon.
Orthopedic surgeon, perfect. Dr. Clapper, do you know him?
I don't.
Dr. Clapper, he had a radio show on for on Saturday mornings for a long time.
In L.A.?
Yeah, he's one of the best. So, and he's become a buddy after two hips. two trips to two hips. Anyway, he's become a buddy, comes up for Monday Night Football and that kind of thing. He said, if you walk forward and backward in a swimming pool, just walk forward and backward for half an hour. That's all the exercise you need to do.
Mm.
You'll be in shape and you'll be loosened up.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Water is very powerful.
Very powerful. And it takes the onus off your joints.
Yeah.
That's what I do. I did that this morning. Put some Epsom salt and some hot water in my bathtub.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And I have to be in pain to get in the bathtub.
Cause
the
me too.
The last thing I want to mess with that hot water in the sub. And sometimes you just got to get in there.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you're 100% different.
Yeah, oh, definitely.
Said, why didn't I do this
it's
early?
So rejuvenating.
Duh,
right. It's all that trouble with the hot water.
Yeah, all this problem.
So a warm swimming pool does it all.
Yeah. Definitely.
Shower and all that stuff.
And you're a football fan.
Big time football fan. And horses.
Horses, that's right. You do a lot of great work.
A lot of, well, I do I do a charity.
What's your favorite horse?
Every year. The Hollywood Charity Horse Show.
What is your favorite horse? What breed?
So I breed three types of horses. I breed a standard bred, a trotting horse. I breed an American saddle bred. High-going show horse, and quarter horses, in which I compete on all three and have won world championships in the other two.
Wow.
And one, I'm up there as a – I've got the potential of winning wherever I go because I've got the horses, not necessarily because of my skill, although over the years I've become more skillful than most.
Well, Bill, you're still performing.
I'm busy performing. I've
yeah, just let's shout out to our...
I've got a new show called The Unexpected, The Unexplained. It's also unexpected that it's such a hit. They ordered eight, and then they saw a couple, and they ordered 20 more hours, which is unheard of. So 28 hours for the first season. So it seems to be really going well, The Unexplained. Got a couple more shows that I'm... Just, I believe I've sold. I'll make an announcement in the next few weeks. I have in my phone a sizzle reel, which is a part of a sales tool. You bring the explanation of the show, and you have a little film on the show as sales tools to sell to people who might buy it. So I've got, I rode a new motorcycle, absolutely a new design. A couple of years ago, this happened. And I drove that motorcycle from Chicago to L.A.
Mm.
It took 8 days, and we drove with the American Legion and various other people. So I was raising money for the American Legion, their college fund, and I was shooting a documentary of the ride, which I called The Ride, and we were also trying to sell that new motorcycle. So there was a lot going on. And I've got in my phone the sizzle reel that I'm going around now trying to sell, The Ride, plus other things. I'm on tour with a movie that would come out after the movie. So The Wrath of Khan. I've been to many places in the States, and in February I'll tour Europe.
Mm.
For several engagements. I'm really busy and really doing a lot of work.
Is it too much work? It feels sometimes you get tired sometimes. You don't know where you wake up. You think you're home and you're in another country.
For the last many months, I wake up and I think, oh, yeah, I'm home. Or, where am I? And I don't panic
what
anymore.
What time it is, right?
What time is it? Oh, my God. I was just in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, wow. Last week. And then back east until Sunday. Yeah, it used to frighten me. Like, where am I? Oh, my God. Now, where am I? Okay, I don't need to be frightened. It'll take a few moments before I realize where I am. So not only do I not know where I am, I've gotten to the point where I don't get frightened not knowing where I'm at.
That's good.
At, yeah.
Turn that corner.
Somewhere where it's 9 o'clock at night and it looks like it looks outside now.
Yeah, exactly.
In the morning, like, yeah. What the hell? We're walking outside at 10 o'clock at night and it looks like...
Are you traveling a lot?
Yes.
What are you doing? Are you lecturing?
I do some of my lectures. I do some of my autograph signings.
Yeah.
And then I just go around just for my daughter for tennis. She had, I have a young daughter that's 10 years old, and she's training to become a pro tennis player. So we go to France. We go to
She's 10 years old and playing tennis.
Yeah,
she's really a phenom.
She has your hand-eye coordination.
Well, I don't know what she has. She's
got your athleticism.
She's good, yeah. She's good.
I've got a 14-year-old doing the same thing.
Yes.
She's really good.
She really likes playing. Has she
got the rage?
She hasn't developed that yet. She has a different lifestyle. Listen, I have the rage because if I fail, I fail.
Right.
I go back to Brownville.
Right.
She failed. She still got a big mansion to live in. She has a big pool.
Exactly.
She has big cars driving her
exactly.
around. So it's a different outlook.
Very difficult to have the hunger when you're...
You have to just have... Some people... let me tell you something funny. Like, you look at Muhammad Ali, right? Had both mother, father, happy home, happy family, never poor, middle class. But he had the desire to be the best in something.
Yeah.
Listen... Best fighter in the history of the world, right? I don't think he ever had a street fight.
Who?
I don't think Muhammad Ali ever had a street fight.
Right, right,
story
right.
That his manager.
Right, I know Louisville where he comes from.
Gene Curry told me this. It's this guy that's the bouncer. He's the scariest guy in Louisville. He knocks out guys in the because he's a bouncer in the clubs all the time. So he signed up to fight in the boxing tournament, the amateur championship. And Ali's in there. He's the scariest guy, so Ali got to box him. So Ali's scared to death. So Ali's just hitting him with the jab, you know, but he breaks the guy's nose. The guy got two black eyes. He beats the guy real easy. And so he's scared. Ali goes in the house and never comes back outside. Because he's scared the guy's going to get him. And that's what Gene killed. So the guy had to come to the door and knock his head. It's okay, you're a great fighter. You had such a great fight. But he never really, you know, he wasn't a street kid.
So where did that hunger come from?
Exactly. Interesting,
right? An illusion of himself.
A what?
His illusion of himself.
That he was the greatest.
Yeah.
He bought into the illusion.
And that's what all of this is about. Our illusion of ourselves. Our illusion is being a scumbag. Our illusion is being a rough, ruthless, whatever. Our illusion is being a caretaker, in loving people. You know, our illusion of who we are.
And Michael, do you believe that it's all illusion as to who we are? Do we know who we are ever?
Well, I always ask people this question when I have a chance to say something. It was this person that they discovered a fossil of Lucy that's 4.4 million years old.
Yes.
And so can you fathom the first man, the first guy to put that seed in your family gene, the first that started the Shatner family, even though it was a different name, but started that bloodline. Who was he? What color was he 4.4 million years ago? What, who do you think he was?
Well, we know it was Lucy.
Huh?
We know it's a little nut brown Lucy.
Yeah, but it was 4.4 million years, and that wasn't the first person.
Right.
That's just the person they happened to find.
Right.
Who was her mother? Who was her great-great-grandmother?
Right.
How'd that go?
Exactly.
So that's really interesting. Mm-hmm. So who are we?
Really? See, I'm under the illusion we really don't know who we are. I'm under the impression we really don't know who we are, that it's all an illusion. We like to think we're this, so we think we're really bad, but we're really good, but we're good and bad. Well, what is good and bad? What's the definition of good and bad? Well, do you know there were tribes in the Sahara? Sahara Desert was one of the big deserts. Tribes living in such... precarious circumstances, that life and death was very close. When you couldn't fulfill something to help the tribe, whether you were young or old, go die.
Yeah.
So the old, when they couldn't do anymore, wandered off into the desert and died. That was their custom. That was good. Now you'd say, are you crazy? You told your parents to wander off into the desert? You didn't put them in a home? Are you mad? What's the matter with you? You're bad. So the whole definition of bad and good.
That was in Sapiens, the book. Have you read that?
I must have.
Yeah.
But I've read that in tribal
yes.
behavior.
Yes.
If you just examine what people think is good and what people think is bad, changes all the time.
Yeah. Bill, it's really thank you.
Wonderful.
Thank you for coming.
Well, it's been a joy.
Really appreciate it.
I'm glad to have met you, but Michael, I've just... Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you, dude.
Mike?
Yes.
Great episode, brother.
Always with you, my friend.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Thank you for everything.
Well, listen, I take Bill as being like a really extreme, like, intellectual pacifist. Like,
yeah. Bill's the man, dude. I mean, what else are we going to say?
Enlightened. He's enlightened Bill.
Definitely. Well, anyway, thank you, everybody, for tuning in.
I'm not from Canada either, man.
Montreal.
I think he's from America.
Yeah, I know.
Hey, I just want to say one more thing. What do you think when Eddie Murphy said you fuck a purple bitch or a green bitch? Remember the thing? Eddie Murphy on Raw, he said Captain Kirk will fuck a green bitch. Remember that stuff?
Definitely.
Oh, God.
An alien, dude.
Yeah, right.
Fucking alien.
All that green stuff comes off on you. Right?
Yeah, oh, my God. Love it. Well, hey, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. We love you guys. Check out. You can stream the podcast on Apple and Podcast One. Until next time, I'm Evan Britton.
And I'm Mike Tyson saying so long.
Peace.
Out of here.
This episode of Hot Boxing is sponsored by Talkspace. Head over to Talkspace.com or download the app. And be sure to use code Tyson to get $100 off your first month. This episode is also sponsored by BetDSI.com. Head over to BetDSI.com and use promo code Tyson101 for 100% bonus match. And show your support for our show.